This episode and all of our South by Southwest coverage is brought to you by Vimeo, the new home for 360 video. Hey everybody, this is John Fusco, and you are listening to the No Film School Podcast. The docufiction hybrid genre isn't necessarily a new thing. In fact, there are some festivals that are entirely devoted to those films that blur the line between what is real and what is written. It's the liberties in which the filmmakers choose to blur the lines where the real magic shines through. Christopher Borgley, director of the South by Southwest standout, Drib, and guest on today's episode of the No Film School podcast, didn't realize the full potential of the genre until he was halfway through making his film. He always knew he wanted to screw around with his audience, but to what extent? Drib is the true story of performance artist Amir Asghar-Najad, a man who amassed a massive following through fake fight videos he would put up on the internet. For Amir, it was never about getting famous, however, it was all just a joke. It seems the joke was lost on an LA-based energy drink company who decided Amir would be the face of their new brand. Drib is a film unlike any other, weaving together an embellished narrative of Amir's story, with real interviews discussing Amir's experience on which the narrative is based, and behind-the-scenes footage of what it was like making the film itself. If that sounds confusing, it's because it is. Oh yeah, and on top of all that, Amir stars as himself throughout the film's entirety. We sat down with Chris, Amir, and co-star Brett Gelman at South by Southwest to get some insight into the art of play and trickery. Cool. So, hey guys, I'm here with a few members of the film Drib. I'm going to let them introduce themselves so you can get familiar with their voices, starting with Chris.
Hi, Christopher Borgley, writer, director.
Amir Amadeus, actor.
Performance artist. So let's, this is a crazy story that you guys brought to South By. And I guess I'm going to first ask if you could talk about how you two first met.
Yeah, sure. It's actually told in the film too. We met when a common friend of ours introduced us, and we all came together to do a project in the Middle East, in Azerbaijan, where we faked news broadcast from Iran. We were claiming that we were from Iran to go to the neighboring country, Azerbaijan, to do like reporting on the country. And
at the same time, it was like the musical festival there. They had like the Grand Prix, what is it called?
Eurovision,
yeah.
And we were claiming that they lack a good dictatorship there, and that's why they have this, like, as in, he in character said, like, there's faggots running around in the streets and blah blah blah.
Because that was supposed to be like a Persian, it was like a Persian Borat.
Okay, right.
But heavy conservative and yeah, liking dictatorships, and you don't want like Western influence. Mm. And it ended up getting us in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
So then, Amir, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about what you do or what you did around that time to give them some context on your work?
Like in general on that time?
Yeah, just what you were getting, like as a performance artist.
As a performance artist, I was just actually getting into comedy for a while because I thought that was a new sort of a tool or whatever that you could learn to continue to have a part of your performance. Mm-hmm. Background, does that sound right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, I don't know, it's nice to have, try out different type of stages. I wanted to try out stand-up and see if that could be sort of somewhere you could do free type of comedy that they haven't seen before.
And then you kind of took it to the streets though too, right? You kind of, not really stunts, but more like performances.
That was something else. That's when we went to try out the YouTube side of viral kind of making videos. And we started doing I started doing staged fight videos.
It's funny because I'm sure that a lot of our listeners look for ways to increase their views on YouTube.
Yeah.
And it seems like you found a way to do that, and it's just by knowing that people like violence.
Yeah.
Essentially.
It's weird. You just gotta do extreme stuff. Maybe I think it seems like everybody who gets attention nowadays is all about the extreme. Mm-hmm. Like you, there's a person who's extremely pouring out his emotions on YouTube, and that gets like a million views.
So, right.
I don't know. It was just one of the cool things about the fight videos, I think.
So then how did the idea for this film come about? Chris, was that you who had that original idea, or Amir? Was that your idea
actually,
to film it?
We got together for the sort of fight project, or whatever you call it, out of sort of looking at, one was worldstarhiphop.com,
yeah,
a website that curates. First it was like a music site and became like a curator of violent and obscene videos.
Mm-hmm.
They call themselves like the CNN of the ghetto. Around my interest in that was also when Bret Easton Ellis like launched this whole post-empire theory.
Okay.
And how like the new celebrities are they're independent of the media empire, and they can create their own success. And we saw that side as like, you could actually maybe get a sort of type of success through that site if you just were loud enough. And that was a joke. Like, what if we from Norway tried to get you to be famous through that site? That would be like a joke, and it worked. So it's yeah, that's how it all started. But then we thought it was going to be like a quick little project. And then he got interviewed by like BBC, and there's news in the States. And then suddenly he gets an invitation from an ad agency.
Okay.
And that was just too sort of good to be true almost.
Yeah. Everything was just
happened
weird.
So,
so you just have to.
Yeah. It sort of the story just came to us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It sort of wrote itself.
Yeah.
In a weird way, I think.
So then let's talk about the style of the film in that sense where, you know, there was a script, right?
Yeah.
But then it was also just based off of your experience.
Mm.
What was that process like for you writing this sort of hybrid documentary narrative?
Yeah. So me and like Amir had to break his sort of contract with the agency.
Yeah, so the NDA, was that,
yeah,
came into...
So yeah, there was an NDA that we had to sort of go around, but before we even thought of it as a legal problem, because we didn't have funding or anything, he just told me everything that happened in detail. And I also already have like a big interest in marketing and media manipulation, and been like interested in the history of marketing from Edward Bernays, you know, Freud's nephew, came to New York and sort of invented modern PR. And so just his sort of insights combined with mine insight already had a big amount of source material already.
Hmm.
So yeah, the script was written with both of our common sort of course, his real story, but then also I added a lot to it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it was a vehicle where I could write all the things that I was interested in. I could put it in his real story, sort of appropriating it a little bit. And then we were set out to make the film, and Amir being who he is, it sort of naturally started becoming a documentary. It wasn't sort of supposed to be a documentary. There was all of these ideas that it could be. We could do an interview. We could do like breaking the fourth wall and talk about the process of making the film, but it wasn't in the script.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't necessarily going to happen, but I was open for it. So once it started to happen, I had a deal with my DP that he should just shoot. If me and Amir go in another room and have a fight, try to get the camera in there.
Yeah.
And so it became, there's a parallel narrative of the story that happened in 2014 and then also the story that happened in 2016 when we were shooting the story.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, and those stories are very similar. Like, one is he gets picked up to go to an agency in LA to be a part of an ad process. And he ruins it, sort of. And then, again, he comes to LA to be a part of a film process, and he sort of ruins that, too. And, yeah.
So then you talked about how you asked the DP to, you know, keep the camera on at all times. Were there any other strategies you used once you figured out that, you know, this was a documentary to sort of blur the lines of reality and fiction in that sense? Because the film really, I mean, I've never seen a movie do as good a job of confusing their audience as to like what's real and what's not real. Yeah. Can you talk about some of those strategies?
Being one is like being vaguely open.
Okay.
Like admitting to some facts. Like, we have a discussion in the film about, there's a scene where we discuss, should we actually portray that scene this way? Because he says it didn't happen that way. But we never say what really happened. So we're just like back and forth if we should like have one specific detail in it. But I think we're constantly inviting the audience to question what is... It's like the truth is out there. It's not in what you see. There is a real story there. It's referencing a real story, but we're not sure how much of it is on the screen. Mm-hmm. And I think, or I know for my personal... my sort of gateway drug into all of this was growing up and being a fan of Seinfeld and seeing like season 4 when they go and pitch the show. Mm-hmm. And Jerry goes home and he talks to Kramer about, we might do a show about us and you might be a character in it. And Kramer says, who's going to play me? I think I should play me. And we're sort of forced to think that, okay, I don't believe that this conversation is happening and it's real, but it's referencing a reality that might have happened 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it forces you to connect the real world with the very obvious construction that you're watching. And that's a very deliberate way of doing our film, is constantly pointing out the construction of our film. Like, films in general are... made in a way that you're forgetting that you're watching a film. You're so immersed in just the viewing of it that you forget that it's acting or it's manipulation. Mm. You're sort of just moved and that's what we wanted to do, the opposite. We wanted to remind the audience constantly that this isn't real, but the truth is out there.
Totally. I mean, that's one of the things that I was actually going to ask about, are sort of these like bloopers that you use that intentionally draw the like audience out of the narrative.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting to keep them aware of the like the fact that they're watching a film itself.
Yeah.
So then let's talk a little bit about your the way you worked on set, because there was numerous references yesterday to sort of like an organized chaos.
Yeah.
Can you like speak a little about what that means and how you sort of, what conditions, was that like just an outcome of consequences or was that like something that you came in wanting to, like a directing style?
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that they said like organized chaos and not just chaos. No, again, I think I pointed out to everyone that this is a different type of film process and that we're bringing in this guy who's playing himself, who is not like a Hollywood actor, and you all are, and that we know that that's going to create something, and please play along with, if anything happens, we're open to keep the cameras rolling and sort of get the strangeness of it all mm-hmm. captured. And yeah, the film is scripted and we follow, we had like a super tight deadline.
How many days did you shoot it in?
we had 15 shooting days in LA.
Yeah.
But then we added on more days in Oslo. Mm-hmm. But so the LA shoot itself, because it's expensive shooting there, was very tight. And so we couldn't afford, like, let's just improvise for 2 hours. Like, we had to get the pages on the script. But within that, it was also moments where you could sort of, I guess...
Play?
Yeah, a little bit. But play, it... I wasn't sure how much of that I wanted at the time, because I was very annoyed whenever Amir did his shtick. Yeah. And I'm like, we got to get this scene, Amir. Why are you dancing? You're supposed to do something completely different in the scene. In the middle of editing, that's when I saw that this should be all included. So it wasn't, I was like, after the fact of coming home and being like frustrated that a lot of these sort of things happened, I was very glad in the end that you brought that to the film.
Yeah, Amir, what was that like for you kind of working with these Hollywood actors? Were you ever kind of like fucking with them at points? As a means to, I don't know, like, I mean, you say play, which is a really good term, I think, for what actors should be doing. I think that maybe some of that is lost in Hollywood. So was that like something that you were aware of or trying to?
No, I was just trying to have my sort of side of the story told too. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's sort of hard to take everything so seriously too, like when we were on the Q&A, no, but the story is based on the commercial campaign. It was the same sort of I don't know, it's very hard taking Hollywood actors serious too, and I don't know, it was just like a bit fun to, because I had the freedom, I have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
They have everything to lose because they have to go to auditions tomorrow and get new roles. But I don't think I'm going to be a actor. I think I'm just going to be. So I can just sort of ruin my own career if I want to, as an actor at least. So that's just another check.
Yeah,
so
you did a good job with that. Yeah.
No, I think honestly, like, if you're interested, are you like interested in acting and in any other projects? Or?
I think it would be fun, and I think maybe if I'd do it, I'd do it more, be more professional.
He's trying to get back into the career now.
No, but I think
I don't know. It's just like I said, it was like really, it was fun to have. It's always fun to have a freedom.
Yeah.
Which nobody else has.
Yeah.
Since I don't know if it comes from coming from the art background, if that's sort of something I picked up. But I wouldn't want too much. If I want to act, it would be with maybe, let's see what happens. If it was a big commercial, that would be really funny.
But I do have to say, like, he's not an actor, not a trained actor in any sense. And I always thought of the value of having him, the real person, to portray himself was bigger than what the best actor could give the project.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we thought of it as, we again with the Seinfeld, like, if you remember watching Seinfeld, Jerry was a lousy actor. he like a drama scene where he's supposed to be upset, he's smiling, but that makes it even sort of better because it's him, it's the real person, and I don't think they were trying to point out the construction of Jerry Seinfeld, but that was our introduction. The first meeting with everyone was like, he's Jerry and you should help him perform better. But in the end, I have to say, Amir did an amazing job. And it's really good, and I was blown away by the performance because it's not. It didn't turn out like a kitschy bad as a inside joke thing. It ended up being like a really, really good and believable performance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I totally agree, and I think like maybe fucking like you guys fucked with the convention of the documentary of the film, and your acting style fucked with the convention of acting. So I think like both of those things end up influencing the entire set, you know?
Life happens in 360 degrees, and now on Vimeo.com, so do your videos. Now you can upload, watch, and even sell your 360 videos on Vimeo. Vimeo 360 means immersive eye candy, immersive adventures, and immersive storytelling from the world's best filmmakers. Plus, Vimeo has a ton of helpful resources for all experience levels. How to shoot, how to edit, and even roundups of the best 360 video gear are available on the site. Join the new home for 360 video at vimeo.com/360.
Can I skip one thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
I watched before before we were doing the shoot, I watched the... was trying to study, like trying to find out stuff. And I watched a documentary with Marlon Brando, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's like In My Own Words or something.
Oh, yeah.
And in that, he was really like focused on like that he didn't like being an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And he hated acting. And I thought that was really weird because he became like, he's like the biggest actor in the world.
Yeah.
And everybody references him. And he was like, I hated that job. And I was like, shit, there's probably something cool to bring to the table too, because I'm not hating it, but at least I'm not like that guy who wants to be an actor. And this guy was also someone who just didn't want to be an actor. It was really great.
Yeah.
So maybe that's influenced some of the... playfulness, at least.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
Or cockiness.
I think like that. It's liberating in that sense, you know. And I was gonna ask Chris, like, was it liberating for you coming from like this advertising world and this sort of world that, you know, it's pretty appropriate that this film premiered at South by Southwest,
yeah,
because like every panel that I've been to, so far has just been all about how all this media is converging.
Yeah.
Like it's brand marketing, like branded content.
Yeah.
Is becoming like the new form of art, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, I think that that's something that your film did so well, like illustrated so well.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on how this sort of medium is evolving? Are you a fan of this whole brand convergence thing, or do you think it's hurting art? I think I know the answer, but I'd like to hear what you have to say about it.
Well, to your first point, it was sort of a catharsis, having worked with and seen a lot of things in advertising,
mm-hmm.
And never like spoken up about it, and getting to make this film. And in terms of, yeah, here's our friend.
Hi. Hello.
Hey.
Oh my God. Hi guys.
What's up?
Oh, terrible, terrible, horrible public transportation in Austin. I gotta tell you,
it's not great.
It's crazy.
And it's daylight savings too. So, you know, it's, really early.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, always gets you,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Hi guys.
Hey.
So I'm sorry I'm late.
No problem. Okay.
I can't tell you. You know, you got like standing at that hotel driveway. You know, you think you're gonna go insane.
Yeah.
Where is a cab?
Yeah.
None coming. Anyway, that's my bit on that.
Do you want to just tell our listeners who you are?
Hi. I'm Brett Gelman. I play Brady in Drib. And yeah, that's me. I'm an actor.
Well, I'll just catch you up on the question that we're on right now.
Yeah.
We're talking about how this film was sort of a catharsis for Chris in negotiating the new media landscape of like branded marketing or branded content, and like whether or not he thinks that's a good thing or a bad thing for film. So if you want to...
Yeah. I mean, in a way, you could look at this film as also embracing that in a way that it's so heavily branded.
Yeah.
So if we could see Drib as a brand, then this is like our Lego movie in
mm-hmm.
a way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think the film is a huge comment on that too. It's embracing it in a way that might be seen as satirical, but there's also some sort of, not love, but sort of, we had so much fun with creating a brand,
mm-hmm.
with like the logos, the packaging, the fashion of it, and just I guess it is fun to be a capitalist and a CEO, and that fun probably hurting a lot of the world, but it was fun for me.
Yeah, there's this whole extended campaign that you guys have, I'll describe it, where you're basically wearing all this Drib clothing now even. Yeah. So that was a pretty cool part of the film. I think we only have time for one more question, unfortunately.
Yeah, I am.
Sorry, Brett, to have you come out here.
I mean, it's not your fault.
Oh, yeah. It's Austin.
We can continue later.
Yeah.
We can get on the phone and talk to... talk for hours.
Yeah, I'm sure we could.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I mean,
what is your question?
My question, I guess, would be, I mean, I like to close out all the podcasts with this question of if you have any advice for aspiring filmmakers or actors or comedians trying to make a name for themselves, or not even really trying to make a name for themselves, but doing something like you guys did where like you really made a project that you wanted to do, you know, what would you say?
I mean, I wouldn't follow the recipe in the film of going out picking fights.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, one of the reasons I love the film and love Christopher and Amir as artists, mm-hmm. And I really do, you know, I don't throw that word around.
Yeah.
I think it's important to do what you want to do and not try and embrace some sort of mathematical equation that you think, you know, you should do things in a certain way that are going to garner a certain reaction. And instead you should really just make what you want to make and what you have to make. And these types of questions of advice to people, it's always, you're going to figure it out if you have to do it. And the road is terrible. So, that's really all you can do is just keep on practicing your craft and keep trying to just make the work that you have to make. Cause if you don't have to make it, I mean, you really shouldn't, you shouldn't be in this business because it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy and it's not easy. So, yeah, that'd be my advice.
Cool. Amir?
I don't know. I would just say I'm not going to be a filmmaker, an actor. I don't know. So I would say just if you want to be an artist mm-hmm. or just be free, have fun, play, fuck with people.
Yeah.
And, make sure you have a laugh or something. Don't take stuff too serious either.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, great, guys. Thanks for letting me do this.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back with Indie Film Weekly this Thursday. If you missed us, sadly, I won't be there. But you will still get Liz and Emily giving you the latest on everything you need to know for when you're busy making your movie. If you like us, please subscribe on any podcast platform you choose. We're on them all. And go to the iTunes store, give us a rating. You know the deal by now. If you haven't, please do. It would be super helpful. I'm John Fusco. You can follow me on Twitter at @Jim_John_Jim. You can follow No Film School on Twitter at @NoFilmSchool. And remember to tune in this Thursday, once again, for Indie Film Weekly.